You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media, Heather Vail, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. Welcome to The Political Fix, the show where we look at political solutions that combine the best of the left and the right. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay is a strategic planner who helps his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. And he also serves as the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their businesses in the U.S. And he has a development lab that creates smartphone apps and inventions. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and internet marketer with a degree in philosophy. He came up with a political development that is called the solution. That solution is to cap and prioritize government spending, and it serves as the backbone for the topics on this show. I'm Heather Vail, also known as The Unwrapper, a premier freelance interviewer and journalist in all media. Guys, welcome to the Hangout today.
Yes, I'm hanging out.
Hanging out, yeah. We got a little bit of a different format here. So, Jay.
Yes.
How's your week been going?
Very good, actually. Monday night I was at the red carpet premiere for Vegas Unlimited Television, which was a lot of fun. And then here's where it gets good. Yesterday I was actually at I was entered in a hot dog eating contest for a charity for Three Square, which is a local food bank here. I won.
I won. Eating contest for a food bank? That's a little odd, isn't it?
No, because here's what the contest was. You had to eat a Chicago hot dog.
One hot dog.
Hang on. You had 5 seconds to get as much of it in your mouth as possible, take your hands away, then chew. Then they started the clock, and they chew however long it took you to swallow the whole thing, and then they measured what was left on the table, on the plate, on the drop cloth, and I won. I did it, and they would weigh whatever it was, and for every gram that was left, they added a second onto your time, and I did it in 22 seconds, and I won.
Okay, good. How does that support the food bank?
Because we had to pay money to enter in, and it was a food drive while we were there. People came to watch the contest and brought bags of canned food.
Okay, makes sense.
And actually, my friend Jeffrey Kramer, who runs a food delivery distribution service here in Las Vegas, they actually donated, I believe it was 10 cases of 10-gallon drums of, I can't remember what it was, but it was something, but it was like 10 cases of 10-gallon drums. It was a great deal. It was like a pallet of food they brought, which was very nice.
Yeah, nice.
So it raised a lot of money, actually, for Three Square, and I had mustard all over my face, so.
Okay, well, that sounds good.
A good time. Pictures will be forthcoming.
Okay.
Ira Kuzma took pictures, yeah.
That's okay. We don't.
It's been quite chilly here in Las Vegas for Las Vegas.
God.
I mean, obviously not compared to our friends in New York or Canada, but it has been very cold here. And apparently it must have been cold in Colorado as well, because Rick has come down with some kind of illness, and his voice is not at full capacity today. Rick, can you talk with us today at all?
This is Barry White. Filling
nice.
In for Rick Raddatz. Yes, I have a limited range today. We'll see how it lasts, but I'm doing okay. It's just a little cold.
Okay. Nice, okay.
Yeah. So, you sound fantastic.
Yeah, he's got that rock and roll radio voice, so. I actually have a friend from Toronto who has one of those deep rock radio voices, and he does voiceovers for radio stations all across the country. I hear him here. I heard him in the little town I used to live in Oregon. Like, he's got that rock voice, and they like him mostly for car dealerships, actually. Yeah. Come on down. We got the sale. So,
Tuesday.
Yeah, that guy. All right, so Rick, why don't you fill everyone in? Let us know what exactly the solution is.
The solution. The idea is to end the era of entitlement and begin the era of prioritized social spending. And what we mean by that is the era of entitlement depends on promises. And we, the voters, we love promises from our government. Hey, here is money, we promise you. The problem is we've gotten to a point where our government can't deliver on the promises they've already made, and they're still making more. And so at some point, we know the entitlement era has to end, and when it does end, what else can we do but prioritize? And that's the idea behind what we call cap and prioritize, where we figure out how much money we do have to spend, and we cap it at that amount, and then we take the money that's left and we prioritize it. And so you know how whenever the Republicans propose some kind of entitlement reform, everyone always attacks them for throwing grandma over a cliff? Well, with a prioritized budget, we know that grandma's going to be nice and safe on top. And so...
on top of what?
On top of the priority list. On top of the priority list. Yes, get your mind out of the Las Vegas gutter, please. Okay.
Well, so, I'm picturing you shoving a whole pile of grandmas off the cliff, and she's the one that lands on top of the pile.
Oh, I see. Okay, so, no. Yeah, the only grandmas that will be thrown off the cliff are the rich grandmas, and that's okay because they have jetpacks. They'll just fly away and live their life and be happy. And meanwhile, our social spending ideas will compete with each other. We'll find better and better ways to help the people who need help most, and we'll constantly improve social spending. So we are ending the era of entitlement and beginning the era of prioritized social spending.
Okay. I notice you have a new Pentonomics shirt there with a snazzy logo that I haven't seen before. It's pretty cool. Looks like a rock guitar. Can you explain exactly what Pentonomics is?
Pentonomics is the underlying philosophy. It says, look, individuals have resources. We as a group, as a nation, we have resources collectively. Politicians, they compete for political resources, positions of power. Foreign nations have resources. And then there's also the concept of saving resources for the future. And so we believe a wise society will economize all five of these resource types. So capitalism is the individual or private resource economy. Cap and prioritize, what we're talking about today, is the collective resource economy. Democracy, however you want to call it, is the political resource economy where politicians compete for limited resources. Diplomacy is how we maximize our use of foreign resources, so that's the foreign resource economy. And then cap and trade is one way of economizing what we leave for the future, economizing our future resources. So Pentonomics puts all of this under one theory of government and shows how similar our challenges are and how we've already solved three of the five challenges. And it gives us confidence that cap and prioritize really is the way to solve our issue over how we spend our collective resources.
Okay. So why does the logo look like a rock guitar, just to make politics cool?
Well, the five-pointed star represents pentonomics, penta meaning five, of course.
Yeah.
And so we got to put the word pentonomics in there someplace. So it does look kind of like a rock guitar, but that's just because it's a cool logo. Okay. It has nothing to do with guitars.
has nothing to do with rock and roll. Yeah. That's
Now, this logo is actually one that I designed personally. I didn't have an artist help me, so maybe that's part of the problem. Is that maybe?
No, I don't think it's a problem. I think it looks good. But it looks like you're saying politics are cool. Let's rock and roll with this new idea.
Yes.
You know, well, Rock the Vote was actually one of the most effective outreach campaigns in the history of modern politics. So perhaps making it cool is not such a terrible thing. But also I like that Rick sort of offset the five-pointed star so it doesn't look like the, pentagram, which is the symbol of, witchcraft and... because it's offset, so it doesn't represent that.
Well, you know what, Jay? Thank you for bringing that up. I was waiting to talk about the connection to the... the underworld.
Okay.
So it's a very important branding point to bring that up early in the conversation.
Seriously or not seriously?
I think he's being sarcastic. Yes.
Okay, I don't know. I never know with you.
I'm being sarcastic.
But the pentagram is in a circle, first of all. And it also has the lines go right through the star.
Not an empty star. When someone holds up a U.S. flag... I never, ever, ever hear people say, oh, look, 50 different double worshiper symbols on the flag. No, never, ever, ever. But whenever I bring up the Pentonomic star, somehow it's always about the devil.
Really? Seriously?
I think it's because of the word penta.
It is.
What about the Pentagon?
Like,
why don't they associate it with the Pentagon?
Well, some people do maybe, but
I think the Pentagon
is more anchored in geometry. I mean, you know, it's not pentagram, it's Pentagon. Where penta what? You know, they don't know, and so they fill in the gaps with their own imagination, and it means, you know, the devil economy. Devilnomics.
Ooh.
You're Halloween the entitlement era? You are the devilnomic. King, lord, overlord.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So we may actually not lead with this name. I'm open to other names if you guys have any ideas. But, you know, Five-onomics, this doesn't sound...
No. Well, right. can you come up with a six, and then we can call it sexonomics?
Sexonomics? Sexonomics?
You think he had a problem with Pentagon? Pentagonomics? You ain't seen nothing yet, sister. Really tries to cart that out.
Yeah.
All right. Come up with two more. We'll call it septonomics.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, or come up with three more. We'll call it octonomics.
Yeah. Octopus. Octomat. You're like.
Okay. Sept is probably your best bet. They're only gonna think about September when you say septonomics. So.
Well.
It's probably better than sex or octopuses. Octopi.
It reminds me of the old Saturday Night Live skit with Nicolas Cage, where he's the father and the mother is very pregnant, and they're trying to pick baby names. And every name that she comes up with, he finds some way that the kid will be teased. And so they just can't pick out any name. And finally the doorbell rings, and the pizza delivery guy says, "Pizza for Asswipe Johnson." And the guy says, "No, it's Aswipe." Naming is hard. We're going to launch the revolution, I think, under the name Prioritize, mm-hmm. Meaning because it's all about prioritizing spending. So, you know, we're going to organize to prioritize.
Okay. A little more generic, not as unique, but okay.
Well, everybody talks about prioritizing, and when the entitlement era, you know, runs its course, we're going to have no choice but to prioritize. So it is the future. It is inevitable. So really what our mission is, our mission is not to bring this era forth, because it's going to happen anyway. Our mission is to make it happen sooner, to make it happen smoother, and to make it happen smarter. And when we do all that through education. So our goal is really to educate people and encourage them to tell their friends and educate their friends and so on.
Okay. Sounds good. So the top story has a tie-in to capping and prioritizing that I'd like to see what you guys
First time ever!
Well, no, you still have to work for it. You still have to create. Yeah. However, I think it's here in the story, so I'd like to hear your commentary. But here's the top story. Incoming Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is promising that the new Republican majority will quickly resurrect Keystone XL pipeline legislation killed by Democrats, potentially setting up an early 2015 veto confrontation with President Barack Obama. Yesterday, the bill fell one vote short of the 60 votes needed to advance, with a final tally of 59 to 41. This was a blow to Senator Mary Landrieu, Democrat Louisiana, who had forced the issue onto the Senate agenda and who faces difficult odds in a December 6 runoff election against Republican Representative Bill Cassidy. Republicans are likely to have enough votes to assure the bill's passage in January, when they will have at least 53 seats, and 54 if Cassidy wins the Louisiana runoff. Senator John Hoeven of North Dakota, who's the lead sponsor of the bill, acknowledged that Republicans would need 67 votes to override a veto, but he said one possibility is to include Keystone in a larger energy package that may not prompt a veto threat. The vote was one of the last acts of this Senate controlled by Democrats. It's expected to complete its work by mid-December. Cassidy, Landrieu's Republican opponent, said Louisiana families need better jobs, better wages, and better benefits, and the pipeline would provide them. While Obama opposes the measure, likely 2016 presidential candidate Hillary Rodham Clinton has repeatedly refused to take a position. Yeah. Most recently, her spokesman did not respond to two requests over the weekend to do so. So the project would move oil from Canada into the United States and eventually to the Texas Gulf Coast. Supporters say it would create jobs and ease American dependence on Middle East oil. A government environmental impact statement also predicts that a pipeline would result in less damage to the climate than moving the same oil by rail. Critics argue that the drilling itself is environmentally harmful and said much of the Canadian crude would be exported with little or no impact on America's drive for energy stability. After the vote, five people were handcuffed outside the Senate chamber and led off by Capitol Police after breaking into loud yowls. One was wearing what appeared to be Native American beads and feathers in his hair. So there you have the top story. Two sides diametrically opposed to this idea, I guess.
Yeah, you know, oddly enough, it's not as diametric as they make it seem, because the Teamsters, who no Republicans or conservatives are for this Keystone Pipeline, because it obviously means jobs for them and everything like that. So they, of course, they support it. So it's,
yes,
it's,
and usually Democrats are in support of new jobs, but I guess when the environment comes into play, environment trumps job.
There is a sliding scale conversion chart for ideologues of what takes precedence and things like that. whoever is suggesting, I can't remember who it was in the article, is suggesting that they make this part of a larger energy bill. Last year, I believe the number was, I think there were 400 and some energy bills introduced in either the Senate or in the House combined. And out of those, how many of them passed? The answer is zero. And again, because again, it's more complicated than that. You know, everyone says, okay, so you know, energy independence, new fuels, new energies, renewable energies, all this other stuff. Who's blocking it? It's the guys from Texas, the Texas oilmen that are blocking it. Not so. It is very Democratic Senator Carl Levin from the state of, wait for it, Michigan. What do they make in Michigan? They make fossil fuel burning cars. So again, it's not a left-right issue. It's much more complicated than that.
And it's also more complicated than just being able to say, okay, if we cap the spending here and prioritize, still, who's to say whether we prioritize towards making the pipeline or towards not making the pipeline? Who's to say if we prioritize towards jobs or environment? So,
well, then there's also the possibility that it becomes a private sector project, and they build the pipeline
amidst protests every step of the way. They would have people all along the pipeline construction path.
No, because if it's private, they can have their own security and they can cordon it off.
Yeah. Okay. Rick, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's a very popular project. 75% approval rating across the U.S., which means the majority of the right, left, and center all support this project. So one of the reasons it's such a political issue is that the actual political representatives these days are getting more and more pushed to the side, especially on the Democratic side, where the moderate Democrats are just gone in Congress largely. They used to call themselves the Blue Dog Democrats because they're left out in the cold. And they're the blue dogs. That whole caucus is just gone, and so what's left, they've promised their constituents more aggressive positions on these kinds of issues. So the real question is going to be when we have the next Congress, and they do vote to pass it, which they clearly will. There's no question there. What does the president do? Does he veto it or not? And that's a toss-up. I could see him standing on principle. I could see him surprising people and saying that clearly this is what the people want and we're going to do it. I've never seen him do that, though, so I don't know. if he does veto it, the question then is, I think there's the votes in the House for it. The question is there the votes in the Senate? I don't know. I haven't done all the math and all the counting. But this could shape up to be a really important issue for the 2016 race because, there's such a clear divide on the country. Such clear support in the country, but such a clear divide in the people in power. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, they're saying that there will be enough votes in the Senate
to override a veto.
Oh, no, not the 67. No. They say they're going to have the 67, but not the 67. So, yeah.
Right.
Well, however, all they have to do is get a few more people on their side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it depends. If Richard Trumka makes a visit to the White House and talks to the president and says, look, if the Teamsters are behind it, I haven't heard him, Richard Trumka, say anything, but I'm sure the AFL-CIO is supporting the Teamsters.
Don't the Teamsters have other ways of making people get on board with what they
Not
want?
Not the President of the United States, no. And I don't know how much of that is exaggerated or from days gone by. So I think those are sort of old stories that have kind of stuck. I don't think they, resort to that type of thing anymore. They found more power actually in political organization and doing things the right way than they have in strong arming somebody, literally.
Okay.
Now, to bring this back to cap and prioritize, though, the solution. The people who want environmental sustainability, the hard lesson for them to learn here is that they're not going to get the sustainability they want until the world as a whole is largely at peace, largely compatible philosophically, where nations are mature enough to understand the value of fiscal limits so that they might project that understanding onto the value of environmental limits. Okay, because fiscal limits are things we can measure today. We know how deep in debt we are. We know what the trend line is. We've seen nations fail. And we can't even be sustainable there. Okay, the environmental sustainability issue is a much more difficult issue politically because it requires thinking in terms of centuries. The science is not as proven. Technology is constantly changing, making things better and worse at the same time. So getting the world to adopt environmentally sustainable limits as we currently define them is just a huge political challenge. And if you don't do it worldwide, you do no good at all. If this project is not approved, the oil is still going to be sold here or by trucks, which is more dangerous, or it's going to be sold overseas. Either way, it lowers the price of oil. And so actually, either way, we get the benefit. The fact is this oil is being produced anyway. We can get a little bit of advantage if we have the pipeline coming right into us and down to Texas, but it's going to, be in the marketplace anyway. So the environmental sustainability people, they just have no clue that they're doing no good at all. We need all the environmentalists to be first for fiscal sustainability. Let's solve that first in one nation. Let's solve that first for real. Then we can spread that around the world, and then maybe we can talk about environmental sustainability.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand enough about the environmental argument to know why they think that digging the pipeline is going to create havoc, basically, compared to shipping oil from overseas. It seems like a toss-up to me. It seems like neither is better than the other, so why not do something that has greater good?
Yeah, it's okay. So you actually bring up a valid point, but this is not necessarily about what it seems to be. A lot of the people who are what I would call not the people who like are seriously into it, but the radical environmentalists want us all to go back to like riding bicycles and and talking through two coconuts on a string.
They have Amish communities for that if they want.
Move
to Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but then they would have to move out of Berkeley and stop smoking pot and put on a pair of pants.
Okay, within Berkeley and Boulder, Colorado, they can have those little communities as well. So they have a choice.
Right. Okay. Right. But again, it's also okay. So I would suggest to the people, and again, I would say that they happen to be in sort of larger cities. Larger cities like New York, San Francisco, Chicago, even, where things like public transportation work. In cities that are more spread out, like Los Angeles, like Las Vegas, public transportation doesn't work. We're not set up for it. You know, to take a bus from Henderson to Summerlin, you know, which is a 26-mile drive, which, you know, sometimes you'll drive that maybe twice in a day sometimes because you have meetings and things like that. To take a bus would be just, it would take you 4 hours. It doesn't make sense for our topography in what is, by the way, most of America. Most of America is not set up like San Francisco, Chicago, New York.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the cities that have really good public transportation also have a network of different kinds of transportation. There's a subway, there's the streetcars, there's buses. You can jump from one to the other on one fare, and you know, you can choose your route, and they're coming along every 10 minutes. So
They work in densely populated urban areas. They do not work in suburban areas, or certainly not in rural areas.
Right. Yeah.
Which is the majority of the country.
Yeah.
Well, we could build a subway to every farm in Iowa. That'd be kind of fun. You know, farmers can just ship, you know, throw the corn down the subway hole there. The train passes through, has little baskets on top, and carries it to the processing plant. It's great.
Yeah, sounds like a viable idea. Yeah.
Well, here we go, though, because in the news also is the FCC talking about regulating the Internet so that rural areas can be funded, subsidized, with extra access. And that's the same exact scenario. So if that was funny, we're looking at subsidizing Iowan, you know, cable access to the Internet via a tax on pretty much everybody. So we are doing that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's in the news.
All right. Good to know. All right, so let's move on to Inside Perspective with Jay Amernick. Jay is our local insider when it comes to government goings-on, and he's going to bring us his Inside Perspective for the week. Take it away, Jay.
Yeah, I feel bad that I'm still sort of harping on this because I thought it would die down, but it does relate to Captain Prioritize, because Captain Prioritize is a sophisticated and nuanced concept, and the populace, the vox populi, the peeps need to be less stupid. And unfortunately, with all the banter that's going on, that is not happening.
People less stupid. How are you going to make people less stupid?
I need to, because they need to be. They need to think, and they need to stop. And they need to stop with the you know, listening.
You can lead a person to water, but you can't make them think.
Well, okay, I was going to quote Dorothy. Dorothy Parker was asked to use the word horticulture in a sentence, and she said, "You can lead a horticulture, but you can't make her think." Very clever. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, anywho, back to this. It's a great line.
That's horrible.
Dorothy Parker, it's genius. Anyway, so let me just very quickly get back to this.
Very politically incorrect, though. Rick's right. You can't assume that a horror.
It's funny, but it's horrible.
Yeah.
Dorothy, she said it in like 1943. Come on. Give Dorothy Parker a break. Anyway. All right, let me get back to this.
Go for it.
Getting back. All right.
We're waiting.
Stop listening. Whereas Jon Stewart may be very funny,
the
what he does.
The Fall of Jay.
To make himself fit for the Winter of Jay.
It's not winter yet. December 20th. We're a month away from winter.
I'm a month away from getting to my point, I think.
Just saying. Go for it.
Jon Stewart is very funny, but he's funny because he decontextualizes things. Most of the memes, most of the crapola you see on Facebook is decontextualized. You know, all these things. Oh, they're arresting a 90-year-old man for feeding homeless people, but we paid $1 million for this war. It's skewed and screwed up logic, okay? And until people start thinking, I saw there was someone put up some survey that was done that said conservatives are stupider, or liberals are smarter than conservatives. And I'm like, and I took a look at the thing. The thing was such a push-pull. It was such nonsense. And are you going to tell me what, we're going to say that William F. Buckley is stupid? That Steve Forbes is stupid? That's nonsense. Also, inversely, I'm not going to say Bill Clinton is stupid. He's quite brilliant. So to say one ideology is smarter or stupider than the other is foolish. And until we come to this to the conclusion and say, look, we both want the same thing here, we just have a different point of view. The problem is right now is the liberals are saying the conservatives don't want that. The conservatives want to hoard all the money for themselves and take over and form this new world order and enslave us all, which is nonsense. So again, until the vox populi get a little less stupid, we're gonna have problems.
Okay. Well,
that was almost a rant.
The thing is, though, as you clearly said, there are brilliant right-wingers, and there are brilliant left-wingers, and there are stupid right-wingers, and there are stupid left-wingers. So how can you say the vox populi as a whole needs to get smarter when clearly we've already established that there are brilliant people on both sides?
No. You and I have. Talk to a serious ideological right winger, a serious ideological left winger. They will say the left winger will say the conservatives are really stupid.
Well, they're talking about the conservatives who are like the gun toting, Confederate flag bearing rednecks. And when the right wing say that, they're talking about the homeless welfare recipients. They're not saying, okay, the university professors who come on both sides, they're not saying they're stupid. The journalists who are on both sides, they're not saying they're stupid. Like, clearly there's intelligent people out there on both sides voicing their opinions on both sides. So I don't think anyone's making a blanket statement that the whole right or the whole left is stupid.
Yes. No, that was the whole point of this survey that was done, was to say that liberals were smarter than conservatives.
Okay.
That was the conclusion that they had come to. But if you look at the survey, it was such a push pull.
And yet we can look at CEOs of major corporations who are right wing and say that they're stupider than.
But this survey speaks to ideologues and was distributed by ideologues too on their Facebook pages and such. It was done to try to belittle any opposing view, and to say, well, if you're going to throw yourself in with that, you're stupid. But I mean, to say that William F. Buckley, you know, again, I mean, talking about one of the you know, most brilliant minds of the past, you know, 100 years probably in America, I think it's just silly, and again, it feeds into that name calling, and worse than that, it feeds into to one side and the other, and the conservatives do it too. It feeds into one side making the other side, literally treating them as the other and dehumanizing them, and that's a problem too.
Right. But you're dehumanizing them now.
Well, no.
You're putting them all into one box.
No, I said ideologues.
Okay, this is the vox populi here in this box, and they're stupid.
No, I didn't say they're stupid. I said they
need to be dehumanized. They need to be less stupid. So, okay.
Get less stupid.
So, in other words, okay. So, this box of rocks are stupider than they should be.
I need to get thinner. That doesn't mean I'm fat.
Okay, that's a fine line there. All right.
You say I'm fat.
If you say someone
Wait,
needs
you
to be
I'm fat?
No, if you say someone needs to be less stupid, the implication is they're stupid to begin with, or else they wouldn't need to be less stupid.
All right, I will say they need to get smarter.
And if you were to say that you need to get less fat, then that would imply that you're fat.
All right, I'm changing my less stupid.
All right. So they need to get smarter.
But in many ways we are all stupid. I mean, think about like what we know and don't know and.
Okay, we all yin and yang. We all have areas in life where we're stupid, and we all have areas in life where we're brilliant. Yes, we know that.
You can't know everything. I mean.
Right. Yeah, you can't.
Sadly.
And the people that think they know everything are the people that know the least often, so.
Yeah.
So, all right. Rick, what are your comments on this rant? I mean, rant? No. inside perspective.
It was rant-esque.
Now, if I call that a whole exchange stupid, you guys going to agree with me or not? I'm not sure. No, let's see. I think we got to be real precise with our definitions here. Because a person can be stupid or smart, and yet it can still make sense for them not to get involved in politics because they want to focus on their life and their job, and the government and the country is good enough for them. Okay, so and their vote isn't going to make a difference. Okay, we've talked about that before. So it is rational for even smart people to not be that involved, not be that aware of how the whole thing works. Okay, that's the first thing to say. Now, in terms of which party has a better grasp on truth, I'm going to say that they both have a piece of the puzzle, and they don't know. Neither party knows how the puzzle fits together. So I'm going to say that the political right is absolutely correct that we need limits on government. Okay, we do. Okay, because we're $18 trillion in debt almost right now, going deeper in debt fast. The size of government is growing, and the trend line is very clear, and we got to get a handle on that. So we need some limits on government. The right's correct about that. But at the same time, they'll say crazy things like government has no business being in the helping people business. You know, it's just wrong. It's the wrong thing to do. It's individual rights only, and that's it. But we know that if people have the right to vote, they're going to vote to help themselves. And they're going to vote to help other people just because they feel good about it. And so government's going to be in the helping people business no matter what. The only question is how do we do it right? And so the political left is absolutely correct that government should be in the helping people business, if only because it's unavoidable. It's going right. But they're absolutely wrong when they think that they can do that without limits. Okay, so we need to combine the limits of the right and then prioritize. And thank goodness the transparency of a prioritized budget just happens by luck, essentially, to align with left-leaning interests. So now we have the limit of government the right wants, plus a way of forcing politicians to help people who need help most and to help them in ways that help them best. Yeah. And have those ideas compete so the ideas improve. And so we can get better and better at helping people as these ideas compete in ways that the left will love. And so I say everyone's stupid or ignorant or something, and only people who believe in pentonomics are smart and good looking.
Okay, that's a little extreme, maybe, but
well, I was being funny.
Doug, we've actually been doing it on the Hangout, so we can ask Rick. So give Rick a call and ask him. I'm on with Doug now.
Okay. Yeah, I rejected the call because we're in the middle of the show. So
yeah.
Okay, so here's we got like 20 minutes left. So
let me. This is, all the things Rick's saying are correct. This is where it gets a little hairy and a little bit of trouble, and Rick will know this from sort of, probably business models he's seen. When people start to offer something for free, and then all of a sudden figure out, oh my God, we can't monetize unless we actually monetize, and then you try to charge people for it, there's an outrage. I remember, a couple of years back, Facebook was talking about a subscription fee. After having, gotten however, 100 million users or whatever insane number it was, and everybody was like, no, we're not going to pay for it, even though it was going to be like a nominal, like $12 a year or something. People weren't going to pay for it because they were used to getting it for free. So that's going to be this sort of weird kind of reformation period in the United States once Cap Prioritize is implemented, is sort of some things drying up and other things flowing. And it's going to be very interesting to see people.
There are different ways to monetize something. If you have something of value, and the value is that you have millions and millions and millions and millions of users, there's always another way to leverage that into money, such as advertising,
that wasn't my point. My point was if you can't.
Your point was that people are resistant to paying what they've already got for free.
Exactly. Which is what are they going to do when the government's been giving it to them? And then you have these, strung out lunatics like Russell Brand talking about, income inequality and everything like that, which I find funny considering he gets paid millions of dollars to be in a film, and the poor guy who's running to get his coffee is barely making minimum wage. There's your income inequality. But yeah. His argument would be like, well, I offer a service, people are coming to see the movie because of me, not because Bill Jones got my coffee. And he's 100% right in that regard. But the same can be said for any type of business, is that it runs because the CEO knows what he's doing. Yes, there are people under him who do a lot of the heavy lifting and the grunt work. But I guarantee you most CEOs got there by doing the heavy lifting and the grunt work at some point in time to see how the business operates. And now they know what they're doing, and they make very serious decisions. And keep the and should be rewarded for that. So, you know.
Right, and when people have been getting something for free and then they're asked to pay a nominal fee for it, they need to weigh the pros and cons and say, okay, what kind of value am I getting from this, and is it worth it for me to pay for it? If it's not, they don't pay for it and they don't get it. So.
But in the case of a government handout, it's going to be, wait a minute, all of a sudden you're not going to be doing this anymore?
But there's always limits on government handouts. Everyone knows that when they get handouts, it's for a limited time. It's for 30 days or 90 days or 2 years or whatever it is. They know it doesn't last forever.
And then when the economic conditions don't change, the government votes to expand them more, which I don't always think is a bad thing. I think there are sometimes extraordinary circumstances in which they should do that because the alternative is people dying, which is not a good thing.
Yeah.
Ever. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely there's cases, but not the majority of cases need to be subsidized forever.
But cap and prioritize, once fully implemented, actually solves these problems, not for good, because in an economy such as ours, there's always going to be ebbs and flows. That's just the way of the world. But I think it'll take the sting out of recessions in the future with cap and prioritize. Because people will look more to themselves for the answers as opposed to saying, government, fix this. Because technically government doesn't create jobs. Government can create an environment by which jobs and the economy gets better or worse. It's their choice. And there are obviously differing opinions on how to do that. But, you know, John Maynard Keynes says government spend more money. Milton Friedman says government spend less money and get out of the way. So,
yeah.
And nary the twain shall meet.
Rick, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's such a complicated scenario that we have that it's easy to get lost in all of these, but what about this, what about that, what about this kind of things. So you really have to go back to really fundamental basic truths, things that we actually can know. I mean, there's a lot of opinions out there, but there is a few things that we can know. We can know that if even one individual exists in the world, that private resources also exist because that person will take the rock and make it theirs. Okay, we know that if two people exist in the world, they could, if they choose to, pool their resources in some way, and now they have a debate about how to use their collective resources. Okay, it might be good or bad or whatever, but that's possible. And we know that if three people exist in the world trying to work together, you know, you can vote for who's in charge. Before you couldn't do that. Every issue was decided by every discussion. Now you can vote for Fred to be in charge, and you can have positions of political power. With a fourth person outside of that society, you can have foreign resources that aren't under your direct control. You can't directly affect the incentives on how those are used. And if you care about people in the future, you have future resources. So we know that these five resource battles exist, whether we like it or not. And we know that if we leave these five resource battles to run amok, where the most ambitious, most greedy, most foolish people get the resources, that's bad. Society dies and suffers, at least. And we know that if we make the ambitious compete for those resources and draw a line and say, look, you can't steal them, you got to pay for them in one way or another, that it tends to work out really, really, really well. So these are things that we can know. We can know with a capital K. We can know these things for sure. And this leads us to this pentonomic vision of government, where we want to economize all five of these resources. And right now we're only economizing three of the five. Capitalism, democracy, and diplomacy economize private resources, political resources, and foreign resources. And we still have to figure out how to economize collective resources and future resources. That's it. It's that simple. That's the big problem. And so that might take a little bit of time to explain, a minute or three, you know, but it's not that complicated. If you read the original John Locke Treatise on Freedom, okay, I don't know how many pages they are, probably over 1,000 pages, I'm guessing. really complicated language, really dense thinking, really hard for the average person to understand. And yet that's the foundation of our Western democracy, which isn't really a democracy. It's a constitutional democratic republic. But, so now we have this pentanomic theory, which is wonderfully simple. You can say it in 3 minutes on the radio or on a hangout. Okay, and so it's going to take time, but as soon as this philosophy gets out, then all of these little issues start to fade away because we understand how it fits into the big picture, and we can focus on the big picture. And just like our founding fathers could not imagine what an iPhone might be when they drew up our Constitution, we can't imagine how good government spending will be after 200 years of competition. I can't wait. I won't be that around that long, I don't think, but I can't wait to see the beginnings of it. And see how much better government spending gets when results actually matter.
That's right. It's not based on results now. The way a government budget works, if you're in a government agency, is there's a very painful process because it's tedious. But you go through every line item and you say, okay, well, we were supposed to spend $700 on postage. We only spent $300 on postage. Well, if we don't spend it all, we won't get it next year. So let's quickly go out and buy another $500 worth of stamps. Say we went over budget and we need more for next year. So that's why there's so much government, or one of the reasons why there's so much government waste, is the budgeting process demands that they grow in needing more money without actually having to show any kind of results. That's the federal government, because there are some local governments that actually have metrics and things like that by which they measure people's success. But in general, that's how it goes, and it's a terrible concept, because if you only need $300 worth of postage, okay, what, and you budgeted $700, the reason you budgeted $700, by the way, is because last year you spent $600 and you decided you wanted more, and then it's a big mess with the way they allocate money. And they have the unlimited resource to not only tax people but to actually print more if they run out. So, until that stops.
Yeah, that is a little odd. All right, so let's have the outside perspective, affectionately known as Rick's Rant. Rick Rant. Hey, that's a good name for you, Rick. Let's call you Rick Rant.
Rick Rant. It sounds like the Shining guy, isn't it? Red Rum.
Rick Rant.
Great.
Rick Rant Raddatz.
The devil worshiper has his...
Pentanomics.
Okay.
Rick Rant, Pentanomics.
All work and no play makes Rick a dull boy.
Okay, are we ready?
All right. So Rick Rant Raddatz, take it away with your outside.
My rant today is about the Fox News' response to the Jonathan Gruber fiasco. Jonathan Gruber, of course, is the MIT economist who makes millions of dollars consulting with government, advising them on certain reforms and so on. And people caught him on tape several times saying how stupid the American people were and how Obamacare was written to take advantage of that. And Fox News is responding by saying, "Oh my goodness, this guy thinks you're stupid," and all. Well, you know what? Apparently, he was right. Okay. So this ties into to Jay's inside perspective. Jonathan Gruber, his theory that people wouldn't notice it until it's too late was absolutely correct. Now, he was stupid for saying it, but that's what they call a gaffe in Washington when you accidentally say the truth. Okay, or this guy's foolish enough to say it on purpose. Well, what's really funny is that he came out on MSNBC after the first video surfaced. He came out on an interview on MSNBC and said, "Oh, that was just off the cuff. I didn't mean to say it that way. I apologize. I deeply regret having said that." Well, the next day, they discovered like three more videos of him saying it, and this one, one of them was in a prepared speech.
Yeah. Okay,
very clearly prepared speech. So the guy is clearly just not worried about lying at all. So his stock goes down. But again, my rant today is that Fox News has it wrong on this one. Okay, it's not that Jonathan Gruber is wrong. It's that he's right. That's a big problem. And the problem is that our structure of government makes power matter more than results. And so what we need is cap and prioritize so that ideas have to compete for a limited budget, and the free market is set free the burden of all these regulations and taxes and so on, so that capitalism can do what it does best, make things better, faster, cheaper, stronger, and then government can come in with still a big budget and help the people who need help most by giving them vouchers to education, vouchers for clothing, vouchers for healthcare, etc. And we can raise and lower these vouchers on an individual basis as we help people for a time turn their lives around. That's how we're going to fix our country, not by making promises. So again, it's about ending the entitlement era and beginning the era of prioritized social spending. PSS.
Okay, so wouldn't the answer to that be Jonathan Gruber is stupid for repeatedly saying that people are stupid?
Jonathan Gruber broke Jay's rule number 3, which is never put anything in writing or record that you do not want on the cover of the New York Times.
Yeah.
What are Jay's rules number 1 and 2?
Number 1 is never let anybody outside the family know what you're thinking, and number 2 is never reveal the secret location of the Batcave.
Ah, okay. I knew number 2.
Yeah. Number four
is make up 3 rules.
No, number four is always measure twice and cut once.
Okay. Yeah, no, Jonathan Gruber clearly is. Jonathan Gruber clearly is foolish for saying what he said. That's not the news story. The news story is that what he said, unfortunately, is true. For at least enough of the country, a lot of people on the political right knew what was happening. Okay.
Okay, but isn't it the pot calling the kettle black? If you do something stupid, and the stupid you're doing is calling other people stupid, like this.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, hypocrisy in Washington? I'm shocked to find that there's gambling going on here.
Yeah. It's very rare that the left gets caught in hypocrisy in a way that's meaningful, because usually the left is about undermining, kind of traditional rules and just doing whatever they can to help people. And so you kind of protect it against hypocrisy in that goal. This might be one exception to that rule, because it's kind of exposing the mechanism, and you're not supposed to do that on the left. So really he's being hypocritical in terms of being politically smart, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. We want more people that stupid in government.
Okay, well, I think
stupid enough to tell the truth.
But I believe Fox News's point, and it wasn't Fox News. It was. I can't remember her name. Megyn Kelly. I believe it was her.
Okay.
She's the one that got the video. I believe her point was they think you're stupid, not. She was rallying for the. More conservative cause, not.
I think there's 2 points to be made. One is that he was mainly talking about left-leaning voters when he says we want to leverage.
Well, of course, that's who was going to vote for.
Yeah, and the second point is that he's largely correct. Politicians can and do leverage the sometimes rational, sometimes irrational ignorance of the voter in general, and they benefit from it. And so we need a system of government where the results matter more than power, meaning ideas have to compete, and the best ideas have to win. So that's cap and prioritize.
Right. And one of the challenges is that's going to be faced is a lot of people in Washington, D.C. are going to lose their jobs. I don't mean the politicians. I mean the people in government agencies that are bloated and ineffective. So it's going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. That's like the period of reformation I'm talking about. There's going to be a period of once it's first implemented of where things get very, very, very dicey for a little while, and then what you're doing is you're throwing a boulder into a pond. It's going to shake things up, and then all of a sudden it's going to settle in, and then the boulder itself will become part of the pond.
Well, I'd like to make one point on that, and that is that there's a lot of concern about what the transition might look like when the entitlement era finally does run its course. Because we've seen some countries do it very badly, like Greece is, you know, just crashed hard. Japan is just printing money left and right, and so we can predict a crash there sometime soon. Or we don't know when, but that's happening. Italy is a little different example because they kind of maxed out their social services and they got a lot of debt, but their economy is growing a little bit, and they're just kind of like limping along, and so they're kind of just fading out, away, you know, and really struggling a lot of ways, but ends up being more of a crony capitalism kind of effect, the Italy approach. So here in America, what are we going to do? What's the transition look like away from this entitlement era? I just want to make one quick point.
Yeah.
Is that the prioritizing of a budget protects exactly the people that are hit hardest by transition. Okay, that's the important point. Is that, you know, look, do you want to crash? Okay, that's one transition. That's bad. That's harder on everybody. A prioritized budget is the most gentle transition possible to the new era of prioritized spending.
Yeah, you're right on the money.
All right.
I hate to agree with you, but we both agree on, you know, we're coming at it from sort of different. My perspective is telling you sort of the sort of stumbling blocks you're gonna encounter in Washington.
Well, so, I think a big stumbling block is deciding who gets to figure out what's the priority, because you're still going to have people arguing over what the priority should be.
No, there's no problem there. Because Congress is really good at passing the buck, right? Great. So Congress divides up the social spending budget among the 50 states and say, hey, states, here's your money to help people. There's only one string attached. You have to prioritize it. You have to rank it from top to bottom, showing how you're going to use the money. And that will create 50 different experiments for how to prioritize. And we've already seen one state do it, which is Oregon prioritizes the Medicaid procedures. Mm-hmm. So you can prioritize procedures, you can prioritize programs, you can prioritize who you're going to help. There's a lot of different ways to slice and dice this. And it almost doesn't matter. The experiments are what's valuable. We want 50 different experiments for how best to do it. And,
right.
And actually, we should have one. My prediction is that all the libertarians move to one state with a low population, like New Hampshire, and so in that state they just get a federal tax refund. okay, and so we'll actually have 49 experiments for how to prioritize, and one experiment that says what happens if we truly eliminate this from the budget. Now, if you move to that state, whatever that state is, you're not going to get Social Security. You're not going to get Medicare, Medicaid, anything. Okay, you're on your own, but you've chosen it, and so you'll buy your own unemployment insurance, you'll buy your own health insurance, and you'll keep it up because it's important to you, and if you don't have it, people are going to say, bummer, you picked this state.
But actually owning your own health insurance is, in my mind, is actually a better thing than having it come from your employer. Again, it used to be the case where you bought your own, and it wasn't until World War II when there was a price freeze on everything, including people getting raises, and the only way to sort of make jobs enticing was for the employer to then to say, all right, well, you know what, we'll pay for your health insurance and everything like that, and look at how far it's come. I would rather, you know, have owned my health insurance and then been able to take it with me to every new job I went to. You know, every time you go to a new job, it's a real hassle. You got to fill out the paperwork, and then there's a period where you don't have it, and you have it, and then sometimes your doctor doesn't take it. This way you have it, it's your thing, and if you don't like it, there's actually more, again, the health insurance company actually has to do a better job of keeping you as a customer, which is good for the economy as well, because there's more competition.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think we've come to the end of our show today, guys. We've covered a lot today, and we did it without the radio. Hopefully next week we'll be back on the radio station as well. But for everyone watching us, and we did have some viewers here on the Hangout, check us back next week at politicalfixradio.com. Have a fantastic week on behalf of myself, Jay Amernick, and Rick Raddatz. I'm Heather Vail.
Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vail Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.